Welcome. You're listening to a podcast by the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. Tonight we're having our first virtual fireside chat. A fireside is a small meeting where we introduce people to the Baha'i faith. Usually there's a short talk followed by questions and answers, and that's what we're going to be doing tonight. Feel free to call our toll-free podcast line with your questions. We'll give the phone number at the end, and we'll answer those questions in subsequent firesides. There's four of us here, wherever here is. Gail Whalen is in Henderson, Nevada. She'll be giving the short talk. And then Robert Riley is in Milton, Florida. Say hello, Robert.
Hello. How's everybody?
Good. We'll pause just a second here to give the audience a chance to applaud for Milton, Florida, like they do on the Jay Leno show. That's probably long enough. And Linda Long is in Mary Esther, Florida. Say hello, Linda.
Good evening.
Good. So, Gail, we're ready if you are.
Well, thank you, Ron, and I'm glad to be able to hear the voice of Linda and Robert. It is nice to hear from you clear across the lily pad here. Tonight, it's been very nice that Ron has asked me to give this fireside, the first one on the podcast. It will be wonderful. I wanted to start out, to begin with, to let everybody know a little bit about the faith, the principles of the faith, and so forth, so that you have some idea about what the Baha'i faith is all about. So, to begin with, let me tell you that the faith upholds the unity of God, and it recognizes the unity of His prophets, all the manifestations of God, as we call them, and includes the principle of the oneness and wholeness of the entire human race. It proclaims the necessity and the inevitability of the unification of mankind. The writings assert that the unification is gradually approaching, but that only through the power of God and His chosen prophet for this day can we come to fruition. The prime duty of its followers and the people who are investigating the faith is to search after truth. We want to be sure that people are looking for the truth and empty their cups of some of their prehistory of their thoughts so that they can at least wise listen very logically and investigate for themselves. It condemns all manner of prejudice and superstition. The Baha'i Faith also proclaims that the purpose of religion is to promote amity and concord among men, so we should not have any arguments or divisions. It unequivocally maintains the principle of equal rights and the opportunities and privileges also for men and women, which is one of my favorites. It insists on compulsory education and eliminates extremes of poverty and wealth. It abolishes the institution of the priesthood. So we all are required to investigate and read the writings for ourselves. I think that's one of the most exciting things for me, is that we were able to look at the writings from the prophet himself, read them, deepen on them. It's a very important thing that we're not listening to someone else who is interpreting and asking us to believe them specifically. It prescribes monogamy, and it discourages divorce. It emphasizes the necessity of and strict obedience to our own government, our nation. Each individual, wherever they are, must obey their government. And it exalts any work that we perform in a spirit of service to the level of worship, so it's like prayer when we are working to help out mankind. It also urges either a creation of or a selection of an auxiliary international language so that we can all speak to one another all over the world. No matter where we come from, we can speak to everyone all over the world. It delineates the institutions that must establish and perpetuate the general peace of mankind. These things are just some of the basic principles of the faith. They are exciting to me. They are truly something that will give us what was promised by Jesus the Christ and Moses and Buddha and Krishna and Zoroaster and the Bab and Baha'u'llah, all of those who have promised and waited for this time when man will be living on peace on earth as it is in heaven, like Jesus said in his prayer, in the Lord's Prayer. It's so exciting to me that we have been chosen to be in that time when this is coming about, and we are truly the foundation of this revelation. So we have been given the gift of the revelation, and we are asked to teach everyone so that everyone understands what God wants us to do in order to accomplish this. Two of the things, if you don't mind, that I would also like to bring up is the education, again, focus on the education of mankind. It is part of this, the principles of Baha'u'llah, that every child around the world should have universal education. It is prerequisite for our children to have not only material education, but spiritual education, which will bring them to a higher and higher maturity level. We are very excited here in the United States that we have a little bit more of equality of men and women, but it is very important for our women, in order to deserve that station of equality, to be educated in colleges and in various fields so that they will be able to perform on the same level as men. At the moment, few of us have come to that station, but there are many, many who still need to be educated. Also, it is very important in the course of the Baha'i Faith, as Baha'u'llah teaches us, that we must educate. If a family only has enough money to educate one child and they have both a male and a female, then they must educate the female first, because she must learn all of those things so that she may teach her own children. She is the first teacher of the children. So she is actually the educator for those first very special years. It's also mentioned that men are required to teach their children a trade. They must be instrumental in making sure that the material things are given to our young women and men so that they have all the tools that they need to be educated. And if we fail, if these parents, all of us, fail to educate our children, we are told by God that it is a manifest disappointment to Him. So, I will end my little speech there, get off my bandwagon, and ask if you have any questions.
Okay. You talked about the different religions and that they shouldn't argue. Do you have any idea how we could have these religions, which are so different, and not have them argue? I mean, arguing really seems to be the pattern at the moment.
You are so right. That is why God has come again at this time. He is giving us the information, number one, as a Baha'i, or if we were all to follow the Baha'i faith, we would be outside of all of those other religions. At the same time, we encompass all of those other religions. At the moment, all of the religions are one. They all are truly from the same source. A promise that God made to all of us was the most great covenant, that he would come again and again to keep mankind on the path of understanding and a higher elevation each time. Like teachers, they've come. And whether we call him God or Yahweh or Jehovah, Allah, or the Great Spirit, they're all the same source. They are all the same one God. And at the moment, if, for instance, Christianity, who has tried very hard to unite mankind throughout the world, if mankind today wanted to unite, it would be very difficult for them to all decide to be a Southern Baptist, or to all decide that they are going to be a Methodist or a Protestant. At this point in time, none of those religions or those sects of Christianity have the power within them to be able to unite the world. Everybody wants everybody to be in their particular part of Christianity. They cannot agree at this point with each other. In other words, we don't have a unity within the Christian church. The Baha'i faith gives that unity. It allows for the unity of mankind because it accepts them all. Each one of them is true. Each one of them is part of this beautiful course of manifestations coming to us. We must unite, and the only way that I can see that we can do that, and the only way that Baha'u'llah promises that we are able to do that, is to unite under one banner, and that would have to be different from all of the others at the moment, but one that is inclusive of all.
So if really we're all uniting under God's religion, and
that's right.
This is the most recent chapter in his book.
I think that's a good answer. Robert, do you have any suggestions to that?
Just a few. Let's say, for instance, if I were an individual and I lived in a country, and say I was Buddhist, and the Buddha had taught me my self-awareness to where I understood how I am to present myself. But he told me that there would be a time when there would be a 12th Buddha that would come. But when the time comes for the 12th Buddha, then I should be there in all my glory and all my honor, and present myself in such a way that I would be able to recognize whom I'm looking for, and he recognized me. So the message would have to go out to the pure in heart. The pure in heart, in turn, will awaken everyone else. So the thing is that all of us, Moses wanted things to be presented within the laws of the Pentecostal so that things would be recognized properly. And Christ also, he taught us how we should live so that we would be able to understand and recognize. But I think we cannot close our hearts and we cannot close our ears. We have to open our hearts and open our mouths and accept each other so that we all may be able to see, because the world is trained from generations to generations, and the prophets are the ones who are the teachers that brought that knowledge. And now it's time for all of us to awaken and honor God for what he has done for all mankind. We all think about ourselves, but the love that he has for us is what created such a society as this. If we wish to see beyond this society, then with all love, it's what we have to show to all people. And if we don't, we'll be taking ourselves in the opposite direction, which we may be going already, which it seems obvious, but there is still time. And I think we should come together, no matter what faith we are, and discuss what our different prophets meant and how it could tie in to God's great plan. Not my plan, not the other person's plan, not anybody's plan, but God's plan. He's the one who had the vision of the world, not us. I think we should look to see what he has stated. But always, we persecute the ones whom he had sent. But in this day and time period, hopefully our hearts have arisen to the level where love can overcome hatred, and we'll be able to just pick a glimmer, a glimpse of what he was trying to point out to us through all of the prophets that came before Baha'u'llah, who brought us to this time of the Father, of the 12th Buddha, the 12th Imam, the return of Christ, the coming of the Christ One, all in one. There's only one God. So the knowledge in this time period is off the scale. It can't be compared with no other knowledge. I think that we as people who know whom God is should learn how to bow down in a way that gives respect on God's level. So we have to listen to each other, and then we'll start to see what it is that God is planning for us.
Yeah, somehow the Jews see themselves in opposition to the Christians and the Muslims. You know, they see themselves as the persecuted minority that is despised by the Christians and the Muslims. And the Christians look at the Jews and they see, okay, these are the people that killed Christ, and they're, you know, have real negative feelings. And they look down on the Muslims because the Muslims are supposedly following this false prophet or something. And the Muslims look down on the Christians and the Jews because they're kind of backward and not following the latest messenger. So they've all got their reasons for looking down on the others. Whereas in the Baha'i faith, since we see them like teachers in school, you know, the first grade, second grade, third grade teacher, all teaching different things at different levels, but it's all part of the same school. So we look at these three religions, which are so much antagonistic to each other, we look at them as being the same religion. I don't know if there's any way we can get that kind of a concept to be accepted into Christianity, you know, without them becoming Baha'is. I mean, that's kind of the easy answer, you know, say, well, you just all become Baha'is and then everybody will be unified.
Yeah. Well, you know, man, if I may, man is capable of making mistakes, and he always has. But then if you think about it, if you could have the conversation where you could see Moses and Christ and Muhammad and Buddha and Krishna and Zoroaster and all of them together, I mean, you could see the kind of love that they would have, and you would know why. And I think we have to base things on what the individual prophets have said and not what things have come to be, you know, for this time period.
Well, that's a very important point, that if we look at the behavior of Christians and not look at Christ and what Christ said, if we look at the behavior of Muslims and not look at Muhammad and what Muhammad said, we get into trouble, because we see so many horrible things.
One isn't exalted any more than the other. They just came at different times to give different messages for where the world is at that time and for the society that it was to uplift. And it doesn't mean that Christ didn't know as much as Muhammad or vice versa. They just gave the message that God was wanting mankind to have for the time they appeared. And they all have this divine knowledge from God, but they only told mankind what it was ready for. And somebody said that Baha'i probably are really the true Christians, because Christ said he would return and that he could not tell us everything at his time, what we needed to know, that we weren't ready. And so anyone that hears this message about Baha'u'llah should at least take it seriously what the claims he's made and investigate and look into it.
Yeah, and you know, you realize that Baha'u'llah means the glory of God, and that's not by accident, you know. And the name was given to him by God. It wasn't given to him when he was born with at birth. There are many things, mysteries within the faith that people need to investigate. God always moved in mysterious ways. But if we close our ears and we close our minds to how those ways can be, we can very easily get lost. And so I think that we should be in a time period where we've got to learn to trust each other. I mean, all of the weaponry, everything that's around, it's the trust of the heart that's most important. This is what will end wars. I mean, not how much weaponry it is in anybody's brigade. It's if I can trust these people or those people to maintain themselves so that they won't harm anybody, and you know, likewise, no one else will harm another person. This is the objective that must be sought, but it cannot be achieved without the knowledge of God. When Baha'u'llah came, mankind accepted the material knowledge and the world advanced. It advanced in such ways that we could have a podcast in different parts of the country, even different parts of the world right now. But we don't see the gift that that was because we don't see the spirituality that came with the gift. If all mankind, if all religions, search out what that spirituality was that came with this materialistic boom, I think the world would truly become paradise and not hell.
Beautiful. Well said, Robert. I think also when Linda was talking about, and Ron talking about school and the fact that, for instance, if we all went to different schools and we all went to first grade, second grade, third grade, and each one of our teachers, we accepted each one because they told us what was needed for that particular grade, but they didn't throw out the information from the grade before. They built on top of it. And each one of those teachers taught us for that particular next grade and the next grade until now we are in high school and we're graduating. And we're not going to feel like we're parting from our own religion if we go from our school to the university. It's just another step forward in our progress. And we don't want to throw out any of the old information that we had or our belief systems because they're true. They are something we're building on. And yet we want to go to the university so that we have all the teachings and the most up-to-date teachings for today. And that's what Baha'u'llah is bringing today, because God said that this is what mankind needs for the next 100,000 years, to progress in unity and with allowing diversity of thought. But the unity and love is so paramount for us to be able to actually love every person that we meet, no matter what their circumstance. This is something that we have to get over. We have to, our hatreds, it's all been kind of egotistical that we are just wanting ourselves to be above everyone else. Christ talked all the time about the fact that we needed to love our neighbors. And Baha'u'llah does the same. We need very much to give up all of the preconceived ideas that our parents taught us or that we have. When we meet somebody, we must immediately look at them as in their face as if they had the face of God. We must be able to unite one with another and teach others to do the same so that we can have peace on earth as it is in heaven. We have to make that step.
There's a psychologist, or maybe he's a psychiatrist, Jerry Jampolsky, wrote a book called Love is Letting Go of Fear. And he says all of psychology is basically just love and fear. That if you've got a problem, you either need to increase love or decrease fear. They're completely antagonistic to each other. And I think the problem that we have with religions today is the level of fear. And part of this is just ignorance. I was reading an article about Karen Armstrong, the lady that wrote the History of God. And she was saying that our concepts of God are infantile.
Very good point.
Somehow we create, and I'm not talking about Christ bringing a religion. I'm talking about what human beings have created in the name of Christianity has been this convoluted mishmash of fears that cause people to be very distrustful of anybody that's different from them. I think it creates a xenophobia.
I think that's true, and I think one of the concepts that they keep teaching is original sin, which makes everybody believe that they're sinners to begin with. So, if I'm a sinner, I want to make sure everybody else is worse than I am, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's Ezekiel 18 that says the sins of the Son are not the sins of the Father, and the sins of the Father are not the sins of the Son. But original sin fills up offering plates, I think, is the...
Exactly.
So, the main thing. So it has its value.
Good point. Well, I think that also one of the questions, of course, that we were talking about in our own deepening here in Henderson was the fact that mankind want, many of the people, let me say, want to understand why Christ or this the return of Christ is now. Why is he coming now? And they really don't believe that they deserve to have a manifestation today. So I'm trying to figure that out, and maybe somebody can help me to explain.
Well, there is, I this isn't from Scripture, but I think there is a tendency for people to think that we have to perfect ourselves. You know, I think this is the basis of the idea of reincarnation, that you have to keep coming back life after life until slowly you perfect yourself and make yourself suitable to go into heaven.
Seems to me, however, Ron, that, for instance, Sodom and Gomorrah and all of the different times that a prophet or manifestation has come to mankind is when he's in the worst straits. I mean, he's just morally declined so badly.
That's what I was getting at. If you have, God sends these messengers in a role of being a physician. You know, you don't send the physician to the healthy people; you send him to the sick people. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Hindu scripture, it says that whenever society is in disarray, God manifests himself to set things right again. So this is the, I mean, if any time we needed God, it's now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's another thing, too, is that, you know, all through history, man has tried to better himself, whether it was with the greed of some kings or people in high places or what. And in some small sense, they practiced sciences or whatever you would call it. And as time went forward, they tried and tried, and things didn't seem to go anywhere. But all of a sudden, knowledge entered into the world, advanced the world far past the time periods of Christ and Muhammad and Moses, to where we have this great, vast everything today. Well, see, the problems that we have today, we, of course, brought them on ourselves, but they could not have come before the gift came. Mm-hmm. The gift came, and then we had an opportunity to accept the gift or accept what the gift could offer to us. And so the time period, the 1800s and so forth, this was that time period. And it was given so lovingly and so peacefully and so forth. That's the whole key to it. But now everything seems to be in a big rage going forward, looking for peace. But peace is behind you, because he said, I will come upon you like a thief in the night. And if you knew what hour the thief was coming, you'd be aware and you'd be awake. And so he came at a time period when the world wasn't in quite as much trouble as it is now, but there was still the civil war in this country and many other things that were going on, and the attention of man was distracted. And before, with all of the other prophets, they all spoke of a time period away from the time period to where they themselves had arrived. And so what we have now is that time period. So then we have to look to the prophet for this time period in order to understand what they meant from those previous time periods all the way back to Krishna.
Well, I know also that I think what Robert's saying is absolutely true. And I think he's reminding me of a garden where the gardener has planted the seeds and we don't know it. I mean, when we're looking out on the field, it doesn't look like anything's there except a few weeds here and there. And so we're not expecting anything, even though we see today all of this destruction and all of these horrible things that are happening. Many people feel like we actually have no God, that he's gone, he's not helping us, and yet the seeds have already been planted and being watered by the day, and God promises that he's going to protect us. He said that he would come again and again and bring mankind to further maturity. So shortly, those seeds will be germinating and coming up, so we will have the springtime. But at the moment, it's still that winter when we're still awash with lots of rain and things look a little dreary. But the promise is coming, and we know that it will be coming very soon.
Well, I think you, Gail, just answered, at least in part, the question I had when Robert was talking. Why didn't the world suddenly change? Baha'u'llah appeared, in the early 1800s. Why didn't we get the kingdom on earth right then? If he came as the physician, like I was talking about earlier, why didn't the cure work? Why didn't it just happen and that we have the kingdom of God on earth just right then? Why is it taking so long?
Yes, and of course that, were you going to answer that?
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I asked the question. I don't have to answer it.
Well, when Baha'u'llah came, Linda, do you have the answer?
No.
You need to say something.
I was Linda. Just going to say so many Christians do expect, Christ to establish his kingdom on earth, and he would come down in the clouds, and so not really understanding the symbolism in the Bible, they think that if he had returned, right, this whole world would be transformed immediately, and that's not really how I think we understand it to be. And Baha'u'llah lifted the veils from the Bible and explain this symbolic language so we would understand that it's not an immediate thing, that this is going to take hundreds, thousands of years to bring this about.
That's exactly right. Also, if we understand that when Baha'u'llah first came and declared, within just a short time, he was writing letters to all the kings and rulers of the world, not just a short area, but all the kings and rulers like Napoleon and Tsar Nicholas, Queen Victoria, Pope Pius IX, those different rulers of the world were given the chance to have peace on earth right then. But they declined because they had their own agendas. they did not accept this prophet writing to them saying that this is a time that you can create peace on earth right this moment. They all turned it down with the exception of Queen Victoria, who said, if I'm not mistaken, if this is of God, what harm can it do? And if it is not, or excuse me, if it is not, what harm can it do? If it, I'm not quoting that correctly.
I think she said, if this is of God, it will endure. And if it's
right.
not of God, it'll do no harm.
Thank you. And she was the only one, and her seed was blessed because of that. But so it was left to mankind to create the peace on earth. So it has to come from the grassroots and go up rather than having the kings and rulers have that divine plan immediately. That's one of the reasons why we don't have that peace on earth immediately.
Well, no, that's another thing also. I think that can go along with that. It's the fact that the grace of God is why Baha'u'llah was sent to mankind. And with the grace of God, he lovingly gave the knowledge for this time period and beyond to mankind. Mankind, not accepting it, the mercy of God allowed us to have a certain amount of time to turn back into the direction for which the kingdom is supposed to go. Baha'u'llah says that if thou don't turn by the appointed time, I will lay violent hold on thee, and the earth will rise up against thee. Things are getting rougher all the time, but the way to solve all of the roughness and everything is to find the path back to the grace of God, because then we learn from God strictly because of love. Not because of justice or not because of truth or any of those things at that point. But the simple love that God has for us, we understand it like our mothers and our fathers. I mean, you got such trust there, you expect nothing less. Well, then the mother and the father also look to that from the children. And we're the children of God. And so what it is the time for us to give that type of love back, and all we have to do is go and find the grace of God, and we still have time to do that. And so that's the law that we have right now.
He is such a beautiful educator.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robert.
Gail, back towards the beginning of the talk, you mentioned the oneness and the wholeness of mankind. I thought that word wholeness was kind of interesting. I hadn't heard that word used before in relationship to mankind. Can you give me some idea what you meant by wholeness?
I think the wholeness of the unity of mankind, when we're talking about wholeness, we are talking about every individual being very important. Every type of culture, every type of religion, every type of personality is required for us to be able to mature and be able to go forward, because each one has a contribution. So in whole, not just the fact that we are one and we accept all the different religions, and we accept all the different races, and we love one another, we actually embrace their cultures. We talk about unity with diversity, and that diversity is very necessary for us not to be bored to pieces. If we have all flowers the same color, it can be very boring if you're looking at that every day. If you have instead a variety of flowers and colors both, it adds to the tapestry that God has planted here on earth for us. So that wholeness means, in my estimation, the fact that we must embrace every culture, every, as I say, personality, tall, small, big, little, very educated and not so educated. Every kind of diversity that we have in the world is really important to us, and we learn from each one.
So when
maybe
the
Robert has something.
About the wholeness, it's like everybody has a net worth, and a net worth has to be brought to the surface. And everybody in the world has something to contribute. And I think that some have much, and many have little. And when we understand one of the teachings of Baha'u'llah, that extreme wealth and extreme poverty has to be done away with, it would raise the level of individual people's feelings about themselves. And in turn, it makes the world a better place. It's like now, and particularly in this country, you have that diverse rainbow when you go to school in most situations. Integration of the schools was one of the most fantastic things that could have happened on the face of the earth. It was such a blessing back then, but to many it didn't seem that way. It was a price to pay, but even though it may have been for racial unity in some respect, it's all for the unity of mankind. And as we examine the themes about wealth and how we can bring it together, I mean, crime would be eliminated. People, great minds of people that you thought that didn't have any intelligence at all can come to the surface, and the world can advance beyond the level that we're at now. But there's no way that that can happen unless we're here to the teachings for this time period, because those teachings will help us slow down long enough to understand where we have to go.
We all have words, even...
We're all doing it, all of us.
The people that we think are handicapped mentally, they have a word. So if everyone, God says, has a capacity to know God and to contribute.
Absolutely. A lady came in my shop today, and she was telling me about her son, and he's autistic-like, and he, in turn, even though he was a young kid, he always said his prayers at night before he went to bed, said them in the morning. He did his prayer before he would eat. And somehow at a young age, he could sense how people thought about him, and he would make them feel good. And so just recently, to make this story short, he became 21 years old, and he told his mother that he was going to have to leave her now, that he's becoming a man, he's going to have to get out on his own, even though he's not going to his apartment or something. It's a home that's over in Panama City area, and they have this place for people that have different types of problems. But the knowledge and the heart and everything that is within this guy, and his name is Chris, that's the kind of heart and love that Baha'u'llah has spoken of. That's the type that Christ has spoken of. It would be a shame that he don't understand why that type of love is on the face of the earth now. It's amazing, I tell you.
It is amazing. That's a wonderful story.
Since we were talking about race, one of my strange stories, the Baha'is, somewhere in the South, I don't remember where this actually happened, were having a race unity picnic. They put up a big sign in a park saying Race Unity Picnic, and the Baha'is were all there, and the Klan showed up. And these guys are, you know, walking across the grass with their coolers of beer, and they start looking at these Baha'is, and they got, you know, Oriental people and white people and black people, and these Klansmen had really confused looks on their faces. To them, race unity meant a certain thing. It meant sameness, you know, the unity of people who look like me. And and to the Baha'is, it's a completely different thing, like Robert was talking about. It's unity in diversity, to use that phrase.
where they thought they were going to find like-minded people.
But even those guys, you know, even those guys, they're looking for a certain amount of truth and justice and so forth. And they got to see, too, you know. And, you know, things happened with their organization and a lot of people that had thoughts of how people should be treated and so forth, they changed. And all of this happened within this time period of Baha'u'llah. And so all of these things need to be explored deeper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that I think is fascinating is that Baha'is have a thing that's called a study circle. And people can come and they can bring their ministers or whoever they want and they can search for truth to understand what it is that the grace of God has asked for this time period. And it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, if you used to wear a hood on your head, you know, or a cross on your chest, it doesn't matter. And I think that goes to show that the advancement of time bring unity no matter what, and the hardest of situations can change.
We're discovering with some of the study circles that we're having in Henderson right now that the individuals are very much missing the socialization that we used to have years ago, which we have kind of gotten away from, with everybody watching TV or in front of their computer. We have gone away from the social aspect of our neighborhood. And so the people that are coming to our firesides and our study circles are coming like they're hungry for this socialization again. It's so inspiring, and we all feel so good when we become part of one of these meetings. It's just so much fun, and we're looking forward to the next week all the time. So it's, to me, it's making a change in our neighborhoods with everybody feeling good about themselves, and once a week they get to share their interests and on a spiritual level, they can communicate with other people and feel, again, that wholeness and that oneness with mankind, because we are all very diverse in our meetings. It's so much fun.
Well, it's been fun for us. We hope you've enjoyed it. There'll be another fireside in about a week. And remember, you're welcome to join us at any time. You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i Faith, the international site is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or check out our new blog at ecbp.blogspot.com. That's ecbp.blogspot.com. There's links to Baha'i websites and some great Baha'i podcasts. You can phone us if you want to talk to a human. Call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. You can leave us a voicemail toll-free at 866-590-4545. Or email us at panhandlebahais@aol.com. Thanks for listening.